Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, we are possessive, and guide to, I love saying this, all things cinematic, and we can debate that. He joins us weekly, the films The Delivered, Night of the Kings, and Quo Vadis Aida. And there you have it. I think we're done, right?
You could put those titles together and make an entire saga, I think. But instead of doing that, let's just jump right into talking about these movies, which are, they're pretty different from each other. The one thing that they have in common is that they are all very dark. So sorry, everybody who was hoping for some brighteners this week. These are pretty dark movies, even though they don't necessarily end as darkly as they are most of the way through. At least The Delivered doesn't, but I don't want to give any more of a spoiler on that. The Delivered, and by the way, it has two titles. Apparently at the original, it's a British film. Apparently the original title was Fanny Lie Delivered, and then it was changed to just The Delivered, Fanny Lie being one of the main characters of the movie. And this is a film written and directed by one Thomas Clay. And I have to say that it's a very, very beautifully made film. It's a horror film. It's a historical horror film. And it's not horrific all the way through. For a good long while when I was watching it, I was wondering, well, when is this interesting and suspenseful historical drama going to turn into a horror film? Will that ever happen? And eventually it did, because by the time you get into about the last, maybe about the last third of the movie, it becomes very, very harrowing and very violent as well. But it's a very, very well-made movie, and I'm very impressed by it. Thomas Clay is quite a remarkable writer and director, and also, by the way, composed the music. And I was very impressed by the music all the way through the film as well. So it's an interesting piece of work. The Delivered takes place way back in the 1650s. As I mentioned, it's historical. And it takes place in Shropshire in England. And we have a couple and their young child. The woman is named Fanny Lie, and her husband is named Captain John Lie. And they have a little boy. And I'm sorry, you're hearing my cat yowling away in the background for some reason, but he's actually quite content. So he's not in any sort of distress. They live on their little farm in Shropshire way back in the 17th century. And right at the beginning of the movie, a young couple barge into their lives. This is a young couple, a young man and a young woman, and they are stark naked. And they are running through the countryside, and they stumble upon the farm while the family is away. And when the family come back, they discover this young couple hiding there. Well, the reason that this young couple has barged in and the reason that they are stark naked is that they are running away from people who they say mean to do them harm. And so very reluctantly, Fanny and her husband John decide that they will harbor this young couple for at least a little while. And that's what sets this whole story into motion. Gradually, we find out more about why this young couple were running away and why people were after them and what kind of people they are. And it turns out that things are not as simple as they may have appeared at the beginning. Now, one of the tensions that runs through the whole movie, and again, this is England back in the 17th century, is that Captain John Lie, the householder, the king of his little farm castle, is a very, very deeply, profoundly religious person. And this introduces very interesting dimension to the movie, because he is one of these profoundly religious people way back in 17th century England who is very, very strict and does not believe in sparing the rod. And we discover that he rules his wife and he rules his little boy with a fist of iron. He is not a very nice man. So, but of course, he's a very self-righteous man, and he believes that he is doing everything that he's doing for the good of the immortal souls of himself and his family. The young couple, on the other hand, who have barged into their farm and into their lives, turns out to be a very licentious young couple who have the opposite set of morals, and in fact may even be, you know, in a certain sort of a way, almost in league with the evil one. And they that what they represent, the kind of licentiousness and lasciviousness that they turn out to represent, is exactly the opposite of everything that Captain John Lai stands for. So what we have is basically a kind of a face-off between the older couple who are very, very strict in their piety and the younger couple who want to change their ways and change the older people's ways, I mean. And anyway, it turns into a very, very tense situation, and things get even more tense when the local constable comes along with some news about the young couple, and things there also turn out to be not as they seem as the movie proceeds. The movie is really, really well acted, and I want to mention especially the man of the farm, Captain John Lai, is played by Charles Dance, an actor who I really like. He always seems to me to really mean business and have a lot of dignity. And in this movie, his character means business and has a lot of dignity, even though he is reduced in that dignity by various things that happen along the course of the story. So he's very, very good. And then Fanny Lai is played by Maxine Peake, also a very, very fine performance. And the young couple are also very nicely acted. It's a really, really well-acted movie. And I want to mention again, it has excellent music composed by the writer-director of the film, Thomas Clay. So The Delivered, if you're in the mood for a horror movie, and especially a historical horror movie, it is just what you want. I really, really had a good time watching it. Again, it gets very violent. It's not just your ordinary sort of splatter movie. It really does verge almost over into the torture category in some of the later parts of the story. But if you want a very intense kind of a horror movie, The Delivered is going to be what you're looking for. Our second movie is also dark, but it is very, very different. Night of the Kings. And this is a film which actually was shortlisted for the International Film category of the Academy Awards. It didn't end up actually getting nominated for the award. But, you know, it's good enough that it was nominated by its country, which is the Ivory Coast. It's actually a co-production from more than one country, but it's primarily a film of the Ivory Coast. And we don't see many movies from Ivory Coast. And again, this is a film which is streaming all around. So I'm very glad that a film from that part of Africa is getting some rare attention these days. And it was written, directed by one Philippe Lacote. And it is a prison movie in a way, but it's a very unconventional prison movie. It's not just a bunch of prisoners locked up and being against their guards and maybe having conflicts among each other. It's about all of those things, but it's about more than that as well. The prison is called La Maca. And it is in the Ivory Coast, and it is a very isolated place, and it is a very anarchic place. And the person who rules over this is actually a prisoner. There is a head of the prison, a person who's in charge of the prison. And he is a character in the story, he is a character in the movie. But as he himself complains, the prison is really run by one of the inmates. It's an unusual sort of a situation, but that's apparently the way it is in this prison in the Ivory Coast. And what we learn at the very beginning, the very, very beginning of the film, is that the prisoner who rules the prison is not allowed to rule if he gets sick or loses his capacity to rule, and then he is obliged to commit suicide, to kill himself. So this is a setup at the beginning of the movie, and he needs that means somebody to succeed him. Well, a brand new prisoner has just arisen. A very, very young prisoner who is there, and he is somehow spotted by the outgoing head of the prison, that is to say, the prisoner who runs the show. He is spotted as the proper person to become his successor as the head of the prisoner, as the prisoner who rules the prison, the boss. And he is given this name, this title, this job of being a Roman, which means a storyteller. Roman being a French word for a novel, and that is what he has now decided that he will now be the new Roman of the prisoner and will take over as the head of the prisoner when the present head, whose name by the way is Blackbeard, when he kills himself as he is now obligated to do. However, in order to sustain his role and in order to be able to become the new head of the prison, and in fact in order to be able to survive at all, our new Roman has got to start telling a story, and it's got to be a really good story. story, and it's got to be a story good enough to hold everybody in the prisoner transfixed with fascination throughout the entire night. So the big question becomes, will the new Roman be able to do this, or will he simply cave and probably be killed by the other prisoners? Will he succeed in this and then take over as the new head of the prisoner, etc.? So the movie oscillates between different storylines. One is the storyline of the new Roman, the young man who is apparently destined to, even though he's just arrived and barely even knows the rules of the place, who is apparently destined to become the new boss of the prison. Will he manage to tell his story overnight and keep everybody fascinated and survive the night and become the head of everything? Or will he cave and probably get killed? And then what will happen to the whole prison, which is relying on him to become the new head of the prison? And we also have conflicts between the Blackbeard, who is the prisoner who runs the prison, and the actual head of the prison. And we have the story that Roman is telling. And so we are cutting away from the main action of the movie from time to time to see the action of the story, which is a sort of a fairy tale, almost an Arabian Nights kind of a situation. And yes, this movie certainly has a lot in common with the Arabian Nights, where we have stories within stories, where we have a story that has to be told and then broken off and then continued again and goes on and on and on. So Night of the Kings is, in its way, it's a horror movie, and in its way, it's a kind of an exotic horror movie set in a part of the world where most Americans will never probably end up going. But it's a very, very well-made movie. It's a very taut and tight prison drama. It's a very taut and tight storytelling drama. Sometimes it seems to go a bit off the rails and becomes a little bit hard to follow, but it's a very ambitious movie in its narrative structure, and it's very, very well acted, and again, very, very harrowing. So if you want a very intense prison drama set in a part of the world that is far away from Hollywood, and the movie style is far away from Hollywood as well, then Night of the Kings is a very, very good bet. And our final movie today, Jill, Quo Vadis, Aida? And that's posed as a question. The title has a question mark in it. Quo Vadis, Aida? And this movie actually has been nominated for the Best International Film in the current Academy Awards race. And as far as I'm concerned, it would make a very, very respectable winner. And here we have another historical movie. All three of today's movies are historical movies, but this one doesn't go so far back in time. It only stretches back into 1995, when there is a horrific massacre in the town of Srebrenica. And this is a movie, in fact, which it's a co-production with financing and support from 9 different countries. But the first of those is Bosnia and Herzegovina. And this movie is very much about this real-life massacre. It's not a documentary, but it's about this real-life massacre that took place in Srebrenica back in 1995. And the main character, Aida, is a translator for the United Nations. And she is in the middle of this absolutely horrific and chaotic situation. And the movie plunges us in right at the beginning. So what's going on is that the Serbian army has taken over Srebrenica, and Aida's family is among those who are among the thousands of people who are now being held in a United Nations camp, a UN camp. And Aida is a translator trying somehow to communicate among the Serbs who have taken over the town, the local people who are just trying to survive their own selves, and the United Nations peacekeepers. She is officially working for the UN, and they are peacekeepers, and they are trying to keep the peace in a situation which right from the get-go is the absolute opposite of peaceful. And in the middle of all this, she is trying to save her 2 sons and her husband, who are among the people who are being held. What is going to happen to these people? Are they all going to be massacred? Are they all going to be slaughtered by the Serbs? The Serbs keep promising, no, we're going to get you out of here. We're going to put you on buses. We're going to bring you to someplace safe. But are they telling the truth? Are they, in fact, maybe perhaps lying and telling the exact opposite of the truth? Then there are the United Nations peacekeepers who are saying, okay, if the Serbs don't let everybody out of here and don't treat everybody humanely and all that, then there are going to be bombing raids and the Serbs will all be wiped out. Maybe we will be too, but we are making this threat. These people have to be preserved safely, and if they are not, there are going to be bombing raids. Well, are these bombing raids ever going to happen? Are they in fact imminent, as we keep being told, as Aida keeps being told? We have no idea whether that's the case or not. Is Aida going to be able to save her family? She keeps trying to do things like get her family members on a list that is somehow going to result in them being safe. Okay, that's not working. So then maybe she can hide them in this room over here. Well, civilians aren't allowed into this room over here. And that's the kind of thing that goes on in this movie. movie. Now, we are told at the beginning of the film that this is a true story. And of course, a lot of things have been fictionalized and composited and condensed and whatnot. Apparently, the character of Aida is based on several UN translators who were caught in a situation exactly like this back in 1995. So this movie is a fictional version of real historical reality. But it seems to be pretty thinly fictionalized. That is, we appear to be getting the gist of what really happened. And again, as we build up toward what will probably be a pretty horrifying climax of the film, things get more and more tense. The main character, Aida, is played by one Jasna Drucic, which I'm probably mispronouncing, and it is a phenomenal performance, nonstop energy from start to finish, absolutely amazing. All the secondary characters are brilliantly played. It's a superbly acted movie. And it was written and directed by Yasmila Zurbanek, who just has done a superb job of putting together this high-tension situation and sustaining it for well over an hour and a half of nonstop tension and suspense. So Quo Vadis Aida may very well end up winning the Academy Award for Best International Feature, but whether it does or not, it's a very intense and powerful movie, as are all of our movies today, but it is not for the faint-hearted. So that is my somewhat non-faint-hearted story this week, Jill.
And I'm feeling very faint-hearted after listening to you. Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films The Delivered, Night of the Kings, and Quo Vadis Aida.